Catch up on all the live shows right here on africatechradio.com.
Hello, you're welcome to Back to Base, the Founders Show. That particular program where we have conversations with founders to know how their brain works. How did they get from point A to point B? You know, in case you're thinking about doing something like that. My name is Lillian and this is Africa Tech Radio. Today, we have a phenomenal individual with us here. I don't want to give away a lot because I want to get, you know, it's back to base, right? So let's get back to base, shall we? Here is Charles Edosunwon, right?
Yes. Finally.
I got it. Wow. Hello, Charles. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm fine, Lillian.
Okay. So let's go back to base, right? I want to know about your childhood. What kind of childhood did you have? Yes. We are going very... Because sometimes people will tell you that, okay, I'm like this because my dad used to whoop me or my father puts the fear of God in me. So what kind of childhood did you have?
I think I had a normal... average family childhood in Nigeria.
Define normal, because yours might not be normal.
Normal because you went to typical, maybe private or public schools, and then just an average family, right? Yes.
So nothing in your childhood gave you a nudge towards the path that you are in right now?
Oh yes, a lot. Right?
Tell me about it.
My father was from the corporate end, right? He worked with in the oil and gas industry for about 30 something years, right? And then he had his own way of doing things. He had his own ethics. He had a lot of responsibility, and then power of hindsight, now I see those ethics, I see those things, and I see myself practicing some of those ethics and some of those, like the way he would do business or approach things then, right? But that's the corporate end of me. For the business end, my mom was a trader and I always used to be in a shop, right? After school, right? Waiting to go home, you just wait there. And I traded a lot in a shop and I enjoyed it then, right?
You did?
Yes, so I enjoyed going to the shop, buying and selling, right?
Oh, wow.
I think I've always liked buying and selling. It's just, yes. So I think that part gave me a good mix of corporate and business sales kind of thing. Yes.
You see what we're talking about? Mm-hmm. The foundation matters.
True.
So yes. From there, you already loved trading, right? You loved business as a kid. What did you study?
Computer engineering, right? I started as a computer engineer.
So how come?
So I had two options when I was leaving school. Right, go to Nigerian Defense Academy. Right, I wanted to be in the military. I still want to be in the military, actually. Maybe when I retire next year, I probably will go into the military, but that's story for another day.
Okay.
But yes, and then but my mom really wanted me to be a doctor, right? But you know, that thing where you know, then being a software engineer is not
the thing.
Goal, right? So you have to be an accountant or a doctor, yes. So my mom wanted me to be a doctor, but yes, I was never going to, I didn't want to go to a federal school, right? Because of the strike, I know. And I'm not a big fan of going abroad to study, right? So when Covenant University came along, and then Covenant University did not have medicine. Right, but I've always loved computers. I've always loved gadgets, things, opening things up, spoiling things in the house. Yes, trying to repair things and spoil them. But yeah, and the option of computer engineering came to mind, and yes, I picked computer engineering.
And your mom didn't say, if you don't be a doctor, you're not.
Oh no, come on.
It happens.
A computer engineer is just as good, really and truly.
At that time, there was no mama computer engineer. You get
so yes.
Then it was mama doctor, mama lawyer.
Yes, exactly. But my dad understood something, that the world was going very digital and very fast, right? And I mean, it was just so I grew up in Warri, right? So there doesn't see a lot of computer or technology things around. So being able to have a taste of it, right? Have an opportunity to try.
And early.
Yes, was important for me. So, yeah, I think that's why I picked computer engineering.
So you went to Covenant.
Covenant University.
Study.
Best decision of my life, actually.
Oh, wow. Why did you say that?
First things first, I was never going to go to any school and deal with all of the madness in school, cultism and all of that. But most importantly, I think academics can be taught by anybody. But sometimes you need academics, you need ethics, you need character.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to function in a society. You need a lot of integrity, right, to really succeed. And you need to be able to be in a schedule, right? Covenant University gave us that, right? Mm-hmm. And understanding that, hey, you need to wake up, go to class, come back. But there was a lot of focus on the religious end, right? Or the spiritual end, right, of things. And I enjoyed that in school. I probably was not the best or most religious student, but it was just that very fun and interesting thing that you know that you can always speak to God when you have issues. So I think that's why I love Covenant a whole lot.
People say that these private schools who put religion at the forefront, they have students who would conform in school but are wild
out there
just because they see outside as more, you know, giving them more freedom than the school does.
Yes, but you know, that can happen, but it can happen anywhere also, right? There were a lot of people in federal schools that were different sets of people at home.
That's true. That is true.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think that for me did not really add up when people had those arguments. I know the only thing that was disturbing was they said we were a glorified secondary school, but technically, if you look at maybe 60% of the tech ecosystem now, they're Covenant University students. So we like that we went to a glorified secondary school.
So I'm hearing that Astro wants to strike again.
Yes.
So that's just true. That's true. So you studied computer engineering in Covenant. What next? How did you start forming the idea of being an entrepreneur? Because then you just wanted to go to school.
Oh yes.
To be a computer engineer.
Yes, and I think I said this last week, and I said that one of the biggest driving force when I left school was don't be part of the unemployment numbers.
Yes, I heard that.
Right. And as funny as it sounds, that was actually one of my biggest motivation. So when I left school, I was the vice chair of the convocation planning committee. Mm-hmm. And most of the professionals that would come to school for your commencement speech. So we have something we do in Covenant, which is why it's still the best school though, called Towards a Total Graduate, right?
Uh-huh.
And within that period, you have a lot of professionals come to school and teach us what is real life, because we just finished the practicals of it, right? What's real life? And I had reached out to a tech CEO who came. And I told him I'd like to work after school. After his presentation to us, you know, he was leaving, everyone goes to him and say, hey, hi.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'd like to work after school. And he said, okay, after school, call me. Right? I'm sure when people say after school, call me, they typically just maybe say it just
like
to get
your Nigerian
back,
uncle.
Right? However, I think I got it on a Friday. On a Saturday, I called him. And I'm like, yo,
I'm done.
And he said, okay, come on Monday. I went on Monday and had an interview. So by the time I spoke with him, I said, hey, I'm a computer engineer, so I want the whole IT path.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But as at that time, the gigs you do in school, I and my friends already started doing some gigs in school for companies, for advertising agencies. Digital was just picking steam then. You had this thing called a microsite within Facebook. You probably cannot remember, yes. Had something called a microsite within Facebook.
What's that?
It was a mini website you could build within your Facebook page. So for the brands now, mm-hmm. they had that mini website. You could do anything with it. You could take people's phone numbers, every single thing. So it was like a mini website within the within your Facebook profile.
Oh.
And so we used to build that for a couple of brands then. And we just developed that interest with respect to brand management. After speaking with the CEO, I said, hey, I'm passionate about branding and digital marketing. But I'm also a computer engineer. As at that time, I had done my CCNA, my Cisco certifications, my networking certifications and all of that. And he said, okay, I'll get two persons to interview you. One is the head of brand and communication. The other is the head of IT. Whoever hires you, you're good. And I spoke with the brand and communications person. And after speaking with him, he said, do me a favor. Don't take the other interview.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then I said, oh, I would like to listen to him, but I promise that I would. My passion is with the brand team. And after speaking with the IT guy, he said, don't worry, just go to brands. And that was how I started forming the interest for brand communication. But then I just left school, not a lot of money, right? So I started learning on YouTube. So after work every day, I stay back and learn about brand communication, and I became good at it. An advertising agency called me to start working with them. At about the same time, I got my NYC posting, so it's very difficult, but worked around both of them. And it was lovely. I started my journey as a proper ads man, a proper communications person from an advertising agency. It was really fun because, yes, it was your first experience. One of the most interesting projects I worked on was the BRT project, the Lamata project.
What was your role?
As digital marketing officer. So you needed to create content in Yoruba, right? Because we're talking about BRT in Ikorodu and all of those places.
The grassroots.
Yes, the grassroots. So you needed to go to those places. And I'd never been to any of those places, right? I wasn't living in Lagos, so it was my first experience. So for me, why a lot of persons felt it was stressful, it was very interesting for me to do. And so I had that experience at the beginning. I understood how government works, because then, you know, you have to create content, get approval from government, and then you have to go to the people, and then you have to make money for your agency. It was a World Bank project, so standard was really high.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was lucky to get one of my first major projects, and as a World Bank project. So I learned a lot from that project. And after then, I went to the London School of Public Relations to learn public relations, because at that time, the Lamata project gave me this passion to be able to say, hey, you know what? A crisis can happen. A project can go really bad if you cannot communicate with the public as efficient or as effective as possible. And that's when I fell in love with public relations.
Before you move on, I'd like to know this mystery person who told you, you know what, call me after school. Because just this person. Who is the person?
Mr. Valentine Obi. He was the CEO of eTransact then.
That is really impressive, because like you said, people just make promises. And a lot of people tell you, don't worry, I know, I come to Lagos. When you come to Lagos, you go call Taya.
Oh, yes.
So
yes,
you are done with the London School of Public Relations. What did you do next?
So before I went to London School of Public Relations, I actually started my company, now called TechSite.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
You skipped that.
Oh.
So you started TechSite before you traveled?
Oh, yes. I started TechSite before I went. Yes.
So how did that happen, right? You said you just came out of school, did a few projects, then...
Oh,
how did you get the inspiration?
Was about I think a year plus. Yes, Lamata project was about a year plus. So it was a long time though. It wasn't very short. However, the inspiration for me came from the fact that because I was working in a traditional advertising agency, as I then, decisions were made based on marketing principles and strategies, how it's done normally. But understanding digital and being a computer engineer, I realized that the world was moving so fast and data was going to be the next thing. I said, then, we're in the fourth industrial revolution now, and data is your biggest currency. So I said, then, I was consuming a lot of international journals, right? And I realized the power of data. Question would be, how do you apply data to what the skill you already have now? Mind the answer, then I had the skill to be a computer engineer, right? And then to be a PR person. But you see, for the computer engineering part, I love the knowledge, but to be a computer engineer, you're either in the networking side, different things, but it takes a lot of coding and a lot of things. And I liked it then, but it was very interesting. I had done CCNA certification, Cisco Professional Networking, and I had done CCNP. And this is an exam I prepared for like maybe 3-4 months, wrote the exam, like took me like 6 months. And after finishing it, they said, oh, there's a new code. Oh, there's a new code.
We have to start again.
I just learned this thing. And I said, no, I can't deal with this, right? Mm. And that was one of the reasons I said, hey, LSPRO is what I will do. Like the London School of Public Relations, what they taught me there is what I'll do. So I applied data to that, right? Because then it was very stressful within our agency then to get data. We needed to rely on research agencies, and we paid millions and millions to research agencies. But I knew that, hey, data was going to change a lot of things, and data was going to be more available because of social media and Google and everybody. Yes, and that was really where I got that passion from. And I said, hey, I wanted to start a PR agency, but I wanted my PR agency to make decisions based on data and technology, merging my experience as a computer engineer. Yes, so that's how we started. But you can't just start things like that, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be sure that you actually know what you're saying. So I had to go to the London School of Public Relations.
Okay. You had not employed anybody yet. You registered the company. I said, okay, we're going to keep up.
I'm not sure we employed anybody for, like, maybe I was the only staff for maybe the first 1 year.
What year was that? Plus. When did you start?
March 13th, 2014.
Okay. That brings me to a question that I want to ask later on. Mm-hmm. 2014, next year will be 2024. And I heard in one interview you had that you plan to leave the position as a CEO after 10 years, which is next year. Why did you, form that? Because in this area we are in right now, in Africa, right? This people want to stay at a particular spot, and I'm sorry, but they want to end there. No other person will come. The leaders of tomorrow are not getting anything. So how did you form that? And you're in Nigeria.
Yes, but you see, for me, really, when I look back in my life, one of the things I'm grateful for is that I had a lot of very strong leaders at the beginning. So, Sir Valentine Obi was one of those people. My CEO, the CEO of Bluebird Communication, Mr. Ogumefu, was also a very, very, very strong, great leader. So one day, he came to the office and we're having a meeting. And he drew a graph on the board, right? And he started explaining what seems like the law of diminishing returns, which is, you keep growing, right? At some point, the law of diminishing returns will set in, right? So let's say you're going this way. When law of diminishing return comes, you go like this, and then you go this. And then he said, when he got to this level, he made a conscious decision that he was going to get another person who was then our CEO to say, hey, this person would go this way, right? So that by the time you get to that point, the next person goes that way as opposed to going this way and down. Okay? So I understood what he was trying to say. It was succession plan, your energy, your ego, everything is going to come into play. Your emotions, everything is going to come into play. And at some point, you need to be able to separate yourself from the business, right? So that you are actually sure you've built a business. Right, so That was what he explained.
So have you, when did you make your mind, when did you make up your mind that this was what you're going to do?
Oh, at the beginning.
And so far?
Funny enough.
Have you changed, have you had any doubts?
No, no. Funny enough, I had a meet up with one of my very good friends. We started us out together as partners for the first digital agency that we started. We started out as partners. And we also used to run the startup I said when we were in school together.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having a conversation and he reminded me of when I said this, right? And for me, it had always been that from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Every CEO should have 2 tenures of 5 years. For me, if you can't solve a problem in 10 years, let someone else do it.
What if the next person comes and burns it all to the ground?
Well, that is possible, but it's also the risk you have to take. However, if you have built a system, the system would be resilient enough to throw that CEO out and bring in a new CEO.
Okay, so there'll be like a board. Everyone,
oh, yes.
Okay.
We actually, we've constituted our board now. All we right. we have board members. But even when I was the CEO, I'm still the
You're
CEO.
You're still the CEO.
Yes. But even as I then, I had board of advisors always.
Okay.
It wasn't an executive board, but I've always had board of advisors. My professors in school, my professors back then in school, and then I worked in New York for a while. So my team lead then also. And then uncles, aunties that I know that, hey, these persons are strong.
Mm-hmm.
To September 2007, I was going to school and my uncle told me a car runs faster when it has brakes. So for me, having a board of advisors was important because they hold you responsible, they hold you accountable, they become the braking system in your life. So I've always had that, actually.
Speaking of uncles, any relations to Charles Edosunwa, son?
Oh no.
Really? Such a coincidence, right? Even, okay.
But we bear like this, three names.
Even the middle name?
Yes, my middle name is Uyi, actually.
Oh wow.
But a lot of people don't know that. I am almost sure.
So how yes. old were you when you started TechSite?
Maybe 23, 24. Because I think I finished school 22, right? Yes.
So you... Okay, ouch. You...
Yeah, that's serious.
You were really young, right, when you started out
yes.
in the business world.
Yeah.
What would you say has been going for you?
I would say grace, right? I think I've always had that grace.
Grace.
Yes. Grace of God.
Hmm.
Right. Like I said, I'm a covenant boy, so yes.
Okay.
So I would say it's that grace mm-hmm. that has always been there. But I would also say it is understanding that... So I think in school, I was listening to Joel Austin one day.
Mm.
And he said that you don't have the strength for tomorrow today, right? So the energy you're using today to think about what will happen tomorrow and things like that, you're just giving yourself a unnecessary headache.
Okay.
Right? The most important thing is for you to take things one day at a time. Right, so did I plan that the 10 years was going to be successful? No. Did I think that, hey, I had this thing figured out and all? Oh no, I didn't. It was one deal at a time, one project at a time, one employee at a time, one job at a time, one structure at a time, one issue at a time. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so grace. And taking a step at a time.
Step at a time.
And mostly grace. Okay. So you were featured in 2019 in the Forbes 30 Under 30. That's most influential people. And I've been wondering, that was in 2019, you were 29. Have you had any pressure, internal pressure, external pressure to surpass any, you know, milestone or something because of that feature?
No, because I actually didn't expect the feature. We didn't plan for it. I didn't know someone nominated us on a project we did in Kenya for the Kenyan election. And that was it. So there'd be no pressure or anything. Nah.
Okay, because you know, some people have that. Okay, I've gotten to this point. I'll always, you know, want to keep topping it, and they put the necessary pressure on themselves. You're saying it doesn't happen to you?
Oh no, you would always keep topping it, right? When you see the results matters. Mm. It doesn't. There's a sowing period. There's a reaping period. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just what it is. You take things very slowly, and yes. So Forbes was a very interesting year for me, and I liked the fact that I got on Forbes. I enjoyed it because it was unplanned for. It was purely the work that you did, right? And that gives you know, sometimes as an entrepreneur, you're very low in spirit, right? But that really gave us the mindset to say, hey, you can be doing things as small as possible, as simple as possible. Someone is going to notice. Someone is going to pick it up. Yes. But a very interesting story, I would say. So if we never did the Kenyan election project, I probably would never have gotten on Forbes.
Mm.
Right? How did we get the Kenyan election project? In 2016... I have a Moroccan friend, yes. He was my client, but we had a very good relationship. And he got to Kenya one day and said, Charles, I think this place is cool for you, right? To set up a business. I said, okay, no problem. I got on a flight and met him in Kenya. And then once I got to Kenya, I said, okay, that's fine. Not a problem. Let's try. Right. I mean, this was 2 years into my business. What can go wrong? Right. So we tried.
2 years into your business?
Yes. This was 2016. And then the election, I think, was in 2017. Okay, and the election was in 2017. And then as at that time, which is why in starting a business, don't say you're too small to put, or you're too young to put the right things in place. So as a 2-year-old business, we already started focusing on things like gender equality, gender balance, right? And I insisted our CEO needed to be a lady. Our country manager needed to be a lady. And we had decided some of these things unknown to us. And when we started operation in the country, we started bidding for projects. We bidded for the Kenyan election project, and were shortlisted to just two companies, the two final companies. One of the companies was bigger and had been doing business with the US government. So typically they were the preferred. And fortunately for us, when the US government gave that fund, they had put a caveat to say the fund priority should be given to companies with either female CEOs or youth driven companies.
You had both.
And at that point, we were selected over a bigger and a much stronger company.
Oh, wow.
And then we delivered. So that gave us a lot of confidence within our process, within who we are and things like that. Yes. So it's also like saying, hey, every CEO should stay for 2 tenures or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That we are not big yet, that we are not the corporate that should be making that kind of decision, does not mean we should run the company as a mom and pop shop. Right?
Okay.
We still needed to act like we were a global company. We still needed to act like we were a $1 billion company. We still needed to make decisions that a $1 billion company will make. And I think some of those decisions we made, power of hindsight now, was some of the maybe biggest defining factor for us at different points. Yes.
In that same 2019, you talked about, I read the article under your picture, and you talked about how you were in, of course, Nigeria, Ghana, Rwanda, and Kenya, and you had a staff strength of 32 as at 2019. What's the data like right now?
So we grew that staff strength to about maybe 50, and after COVID, we decided to scale down to about maybe 40. So we should be around maybe 40
combined, in all countries.
No, by the time you combine that, all countries should be about maybe 40 something. In Nigeria only, that's what I was referring to. Okay. Yes.
All right, let's move forward. You know, when people start having teams, you're working with colleagues, you say, oh, I have this people management thing on lockdown, you know, but it's a different ballgame when you are the, I say boss, but you are the top, right? You are the leader of the entire company. How do you manage to work with different people with different temperament, different work ethic, and people are happy in your company?
I don't know about people being happy. But when you say people management, so I typically see a company as a people factory, as a resource factory, right? So people come in, you build and mold them, and then when they leave, they become better, right? Yes, so I think people management is something you, as long as you are in business, whether you are 1 year old or 100 years old, right? I think people management will always be the top for any board or any leadership for any company as much as possible. We have been able to navigate because for me, starting up, I had very strong partners, right? So same way I have been lucky and opportunity to have very great leaders, I've also been lucky to have very great founders. And one of those persons was Lillian, right? She started as my assistant and then stayed with us for about 8 years, or 8 years, 9 years or so. And she was the people manager, right? Because she was in that role, I didn't need to do a whole lot with respect to people management. But I just managed the business side of things.
Okay.
Right? So she was like that co-founder that said, hey, you know what? I'll manage the people part. And me, I just focused on the business. Right? And yes. And I think it's just that aspect of being able to delegate roles. Right? Understanding that I typically don't like being indispensable. I really like being very, very dispensable. I really do not like staying in places for like once you learn something,
yeah,
your goal should be, how do I ensure that this becomes a constant process? Right? How do I ensure that if I'm not here, this can be done, right? A document can be signed. Like, things need to move with or without you.
Mm-hmm.
And from the beginning of your business, you need to be sure that, hey, yes, I can stomach the fact that people don't need me. Yes.
As a founder.
Yes, as a founder. You need to be able to separate yourself from the business. Yes. Yes, we say the business is you. No, but the business is not you. The business is the business.
Your business is the business. So where do you think founders, people who, if they have founded a company, right, but they didn't get that break that they so desired, so where do you think they went wrong, or where they typically go wrong?
I don't think they went wrong. Sometimes it can be a number of factors, right? Yes, I really don't think they went wrong. I think I was listening to a clip from Odun on Piggyvest. Shout out to another Covenant student, though, just to remind you. I think I was listening to a clip from her recently, and she said the process of maybe managing people, managing your community, managing things, like, it would always be constant. Like, you can't say, oh, I'm not a big company. No, it doesn't work. So the thing is, at some point you were managing 10 clients, and then 100, then 10,000, then 1 million, then 10 million. Then you become an Apple that has 1.8 billion. Yes. But you would always manage people. You would always be able to, you would always be that day one company, right? I think sometimes people maybe just have that I have arrived mentality, right? Something is always coming. An industry can change as fast as possible. So take, for example, we used to make a lot of money. We used to make $5,000 every month as students, building microsites and managing social media pages.
Sorry, say that again. $5,000.
Yes.
As a student.
Yes. So it was our final year. 400, 500 every year. That's what we're making. and my friends though. Yes.
Okay.
So we used to do that, but guess what? A year or so after, or 2 years after or so, Facebook changed the algorithm and you couldn't do microsites anymore. So imagine your entire structure was on building microsites. Right? So you just need to keep evolving, changing what you're doing, things like that. Yes. So it's not like people really go wrong. And again, for some CEOs, right, once they make money, really, they're not trying to change the world. They're just very simple people, mm-hmm. right? Just do this and move on. So it doesn't mean they failed. They just had a plan. I'm coming to make money and I'm moving somewhere else. Some people just decide to move to politics and things like that. Yes. But one of the things I see that is very, very toxic in any organization, and it even affects churches the most, right? It's for the leader or the general overseer and all to put themselves on the money, on the finance of the company.
Huh.
You know.
So how should
I think one of the first things you must give, one of the first controls you must give us in your company is the financial control.
Do you trust people? Would they trust people enough to do that?
You need to build a system that ensures that money comes in, there's a process that determines how it's going to be used, mm-hmm. and it is sent out, right? A whole lot of companies, a whole lot of agencies, money comes in, the CEO uses it, and then they decide how to pay for what the client paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you see a lot of agencies, they own media houses, they perform, like vendors perform services for them, and they can't pay, things like that. Yes.
So let someone else handle the finances.
Yes.
You can approve.
Yes, you can approve. You can decide. I mean, there's a budget, so mm-hmm. there should be a budget. There should be, get an accounting firm, get an accountant. So I see people run businesses for 3 years, 4 years without an accounting firm, without mm-hmm. any auditing mm-hmm. done. Like, I have, like, friends would call me and say, hey, can I use your company for something? And I'm like, oh, why are you not using your company? And they're like, tax clearance, this. And I'm like, you can't run a business like this.
Yeah, they do that a lot. And there are people who, well, I won't say. So, rounding up, what has been your major stumbling block? Some of those blocks you saw on the way, and how did you...
So, my crisis management skill, mm-hmm. right, or risk analysis skill from being a PR professional helps me see things way before it happens, right? Because I try as much as possible to just analyze things. First things first. Stumbling blocks. I'm not particularly sure I saw them as stumbling blocks, right? Issues part-time, yes. Government relations, yes. Visa issues, yes. I mean visa issues because we're in other countries and it was a hassle at some point. Being too young was a stumbling block at some point.
How so?
So when I said I started my company at 24, you laughed, right? So imagine a 24-year-old walking into your office and saying, hey, I need a project of 100 million naira. And the person is telling you they can achieve it. And you're just looking at him like, ah.
You want to blow it in the club.
Exactly. But, so I think I and my friends, I think that was one of the things we did at the beginning, right? We never broke the trust of any client, right? When it's your campaign and you say, hey, execute, we execute for you,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. I was talking to a friend because when I was starting out in PR, I needed to speak to a lot of people. Asked a friend, so I asked a friend to join me for a meeting. And after the meeting, we had convinced the client after the meeting, and the client sort of like handed us $50,000, right, for a campaign. And as at then, I don't think I'd seen $50,000 at once. So there's that tendency of talking about your problems within the $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
But you then need to realize that, hey, execute this campaign. Mm-hmm. And we had that confidence, right? The campaign was to be executed across West Africa. And then we just started. Yeah. But the client really trusted us enough that we were going to be able to execute it across West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. And that made them give us their entire portfolio.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And we still manage our portfolio till today.
That's amazing. So those that are wishing, hoping, praying, because of course you're big on prayer, to be like you, young, successful, what is your advice to them?
I'm young. I'm not particularly sure about the successful, but...
Have you burned any company to the ground yet?
No.
You're successful?
Yes. I think success must be defined by the CEO. What do you want? What do you see as success to you? So you also don't put yourself under a lot of pressure. Right? It shouldn't be limited to the cars, the houses, and things like that. No. I could remember starting, and I knew that maybe 3 or 4 years down the line, a couple of my friends that were in private sector had started buying houses and things like that, and I felt a certain way. But was that my goal at that point in time? No. So stay focused. Right? This is what you want to do. Keep doing it. Right? But one of the things that I really tell people is to save a whole lot as a company. People don't see it, but from any money you earn, you should save something. Because there's no relationship you have, even if your uncle or your father is the governor, that relationship can change overnight. Anything can happen at any point in time. Right? Even if, like, no matter what, no matter how you feel, this transaction is solid. Nothing can happen to this transaction. I can keep eating from this transaction. It's not true. You cannot keep eating from that transaction. Anything can change at any point in time. Save, right? Focus on the business itself, right? Don't let any other person distract you, right? Have a co-founder, right? In starting out, I didn't have a co-founder. So there were a lot of decisions I needed to make myself. But like I said, I had a staff who was a co-founder, who acted like a co-founder. And then my partner then, right? She also helped as a co-founder. So yes, you need to have a co-founder. You need to be able to discuss issues with people. You need to also understand that you can't carry everything by yourself. You need to ask for help. Right, I ask for help a lot from my friends, uncles, aunties. Yes, ask for help. Read a whole lot, but if you're not big on reading, try watching a lot of videos, a lot of content. Right, yes, but I can say running a company is easy, but I also know it's a very, very difficult task because a whole lot of your decision comes from you. So there's second guessing, right? Sometimes, are you really sure this is the best decision that we should be making? Are you really sure? Sometimes you would not be so sure. Sometimes you would not be so confident in your ideas. But once you are sure that you're doing the right thing and you're making, because of your intention, right? The decisions in your heart. Why am I making this decision? What do I want to achieve? As long as your reason is pure, right? I think you would have a good run starting a business or running a business. Yes.
Finally, 10 years ago when you started out, I'm sure you had goals. You said success is defined by the founder. You had goals for the next 10 years before 2024, or as at 2024, I would have achieved these things, then I would leave the role. Even if I don't achieve it, I still need to roll. How has it been so far? Have you achieved them?
Yes. One of the major things I wanted to achieve was building a stable company.
Okay.
Right? A company that can run through election cycles, crisis, COVID, anything. Right? Let the company stand. Right? Build things that would help support your business. So don't say, oh, I'm an interior decor person. I'm just doing interior decor, right? That industry can get clouded very, very fast, right? What you can then do is, what are the other things I can do within the interior decor space? Can I start making my own curtains, right? Can I start making my own furniture? So that even if I'm not designing houses for people, I can sell this. Are there other businesses that will support your main business? Because sometimes your main business might not even be as lucrative. That's the fact.
True.
your main business might not be as lucrative. So you need to decide that, hey, what are the other businesses? Because the goal is you must have a stable system. You must have a stable company. That should be success for you. You must have a company that has a good succession plan. You must have a company that has ethics. You must have a company that is able to do things right. So for me, it's very, very... So that's why I said you must define what that success is for your company. If you want to put a number, oh yes. For me, I like putting numbers to it. And I am happy, I'm glad that we made those numbers. When we made those numbers, I then felt like, okay, maybe we made those numbers because they were too small then. But no, it wasn't. We made those numbers because, yeah, we were diligent with things. We were approaching things the right way. God helped us a lot. And we've had the gift of having very stable clients. Right. And when I mean stable, we've built a good relationship with our clients over time that sometimes they call you and say, hey, we want to start this new business line. What advice would you give to us? I know a client that we have that has, since we've been working with them, they've maybe developed 5 or 6 other product lines or business lines from that main business. And I probably have a strategy advisory document on each of those businesses. Because at the different times they were starting up those businesses, they were, hey, give us what you think. Tell us what you think. And then, yes. So I think looking back 10 years, it was really fun. Right? Looking at the next 10 years, and I'm excited for the new things that we are currently considering. Or all of the new ideas and projects. Oh no, so a lot in the media space, a lot in the technology space, a lot in the publishing space. But 2019 was an interesting year for me.
You've
right?
said this a lot.
No, for 2019, this is why. We got on Forbes maybe April. And then I got a scholarship to the Alibaba Business School in August. So I had this grand 30th birthday. I and my friends were going to go to Europe and drive across maybe 4, 5, 6 countries over a month and just chill, right? And just experience things. And then I got the scholarship, and on my birthday I was in China. I was in my MBA class. And one of the things I realized that going for that program taught me how to see opportunities around me and try as much as possible to know how to digitize it. So what I'm trying to do now with most of the businesses is looking at the issues, looking at things around Nigeria. What can we do? What can we apply to it? What can we add to it? How can we work with the government, right? How can we support the government more? How can we help the government generate revenue, right? And yes.
Okay. We'll find out soon enough. Thank you very much for joining us on Back to Base. It's been a very enlightening episode of Back to Base, and wow, no pressure. if you don't make it at 24 or 23, no pressure at all. We'll be having a conversation with Charles Adosunwon. He is the founder and chief strategist of TechSite Edge, and he has some other businesses and other companies, but they're too numerous to mention. And of course, we are live on all social media platforms, so you can follow us on Africa Tech Radio on YouTube, on Twitter, and of course you just see them on the screen. Follow us there. If you want to be a guest on this show, call the number or send a message or an email to these contact information that will appear on the screen. My name is Lillian Aberica, and you have been listening to Back to Base on Africa Tech Radio.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to catch up on all the live shows right here on africatechradio.com.